At the Mike and Mike Production Studios in Deltona, Florida. This is The Palmer Show Plus One, Episode 2, part of the Digitim Podcast Network. This show dives deep into the topics that matter most with captivating guests. Join us as we explore the issues shaping our world and uncovering insights that will leave you thinking. Get ready for a thought-provoking conversation. Let's dive in. If you would like to put your product in front of thousands of listeners every week on 17 different podcast providers all around the world, all you have to do is email Omarv at M-A-V-A-L-L-O-N-E at thedigitin.com for pricing, more information. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe whichever providers you use. Tonight, as our plus one, we've got John McTavish from the podcast Developing Palettes. We're going to discuss transitioning to a new career in middle age. We have tonight as our plus one, John McTavish from the podcast Developing Palettes. We're going to discuss transitioning to a new career in middle age. John, thanks for being our plus one this evening.
Hey, Mr. Palmer. Thanks for having me on. First time, long time, but not really.
First time listener, first time caller.
First time caller, long time listener.
We just did a different show last week.
That's right.
All right, you want to get in the questions, or do you want to give a little bit of background? Because you, like me, are middle age. We're roughly the same age, right? You're in your 50s?
You know, even with you saying that out loud, and it's completely true. I am middle aged, and my wife reminds me of this constantly. It makes me deeply uncomfortable to come to that, to the realization of that truth, to be like, yeah, no, I am.
You don't look it at all. I would have guessed you were in your 30s.
Well, listen, up until I was in my probably early 40s, in fact, there's a very famous experience. I was funny story. Hopefully the audience finds this interesting. I was down in Orlando hanging out with some of the guys from Orlando, Miami,
right?
And ended up going out for drinks and food with a bunch of them and JD. And so we're all at Jonathan Drew State. We're all at
dropping names already.
Yeah, you know, I just didn't want people to not know who it was. I'm sure they know, but just in case.
Well, this is not a traditional cigar crowd on this show, so they might not know who Jonathan Drew is once you said his name either.
What is this cigar? Who is Drew Estate? So anyways, we're all there, and I'm, of course, the only foreigner, right. I guess is the right way to say it. So we order drinks, and the waitress comes over. And she says, do you have ID on you? And everyone just starts howling because I think JD is older than me, but I don't think by much. Like, right. I think we're very close in age. So like he might have me by a year or two, but I was like the oldest guy there by a good decade. And so everyone knew this because this is, you know, anyone who knows me and spent any time with me, they know this and it's like an ongoing joke.
Right.
So everyone is just howling. And this poor waitress is like, what is going on right now?
What did I do?
Yeah, I said, don't worry. When you see the ID, it will all become clear to you. And so like at the time, I think I was 38.
Oh.
So she looks at the ID and she goes, oh, sorry. I'm like, no, it doesn't bother me at all.
Right,
like,
it's a compliment, really. I mean,
it is a compliment. And so then all the other guys started piling on and they're like, hey, do you want to see our IDs too? She goes, no.
You guys are fine. You old geezers.
Listen, when my wife met me, she thought I was in my late 20s, and I was in my, how old was I at the time? I was in like my mid-30s at the time.
Wow.
So I think up until, like literally up until my early 40s, I was getting ID'd like on a regular basis for nonsense, for like having a beer, getting a lotto ticket. It was just like, so I never left the house without ID.
Do they card for like medicine and stuff up there in Canada? If you go to like a retail outlet or something.
Interesting question.
Yes, John McTavish. No. He's in Canada. He's going from the exotic world of
the
Canada.
Exotic frozen north.
Yes, of Canada.
April snow brings May snow right now. No, it's generally only for booze and lotto tickets, as far as I'm aware.
At least in Florida, there's a problem with some of the cold pills. You know, they can make other things out of them.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, the Walmart will charge you basically for anything.
I think booze is so cheap up here that, you know, people keep it simple.
Well, it's never simple.
I don't know if that's actually the reason, but.
So your last, because you are currently seeking a new career, correct? Is that?
Yes, currently seeking opportunity, open to work. Is that the hashtag everyone uses on LinkedIn?
That's like what they say on LinkedIn, open to work.
Open to work. Please, the bank is becoming very insistent on monthly payments. They're very rude about it, too. You know, I say, like, look, can I just get you next month? And they're like, no, Mr. No, McTavish, sir, we insist.
It's not how it works. Your cabin is coming up for payment, sir.
We're very insistent that your snow canoe, your snow hut,
your igloo. Because in Canada, everything's log cabins and igloos. I've seen the movies.
Igloos and log cabins. Well, you put the snow on the outside. It acts as an extra level of insulation for free.
It's nice. It's nice. Yep. So what did you do before, and how long did you work there?
My most recent employee, just short of 5 years, and I was a business analyst. Technically, I think they started me as they called me a sales analyst.
Right.
And then I think after and it's kind of one of those weird things where, like, the position was sort of defined by HR, and HR didn't really know what I did. And so after a couple of years, I kind of went to the HR group and I said, like, do you guys know what I do? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, well,
perfect.
So
let's keep it that way.
Yeah, no. In this case, it was like, without the proper title to what I'm doing, it kind of reclassifies how much money you're making. Also, it changes what looks like on a resume. So I said, well, you know, technically my roles and responsibilities are business analysts, so we should probably get that fixed. And so that was basically a change kind of halfway through or partway through my stint. And then as is the standard operating procedure in oil and gas, I got laid off.
Was it oil and gas industry? I never knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, because so for those who aren't aware, I'm in Calgary. Please don't stalk me. Calgary, Alberta is essentially the Houston, Texas of Canada.
Oh, I know very little about other Canada.
Other than the road rage shooting incidents, right. Very, very similar. And we obviously don't have the quality of Mexican food, but everything else is pretty on par. Like, oil, politics, beef. So it's kind of a very oil and gas driven market here.
So is we're just trying to establish a baseline here for your career that you're changing into. So before that, was it the same type of job? It sounds like sort of like an IT numbers type thing.
I mean, it's kind of multidisciplinary,
sales,
right?
Reports and things and profit and loss statements and.
I mean, it's like, it's one part sort of people management, because you're kind of trying to manage the people around you and the requests they have. You're trying to understand or anticipate what they might need for a customer or for the business. Because like a business analyst, for example, you're going to be reporting a lot of the metrics of the company. So like the company wants to know how they're doing profit-wise or EBITDA, which is your favorite word. They want to know kind of how they're doing throughout the year before the final tally at the end of the year. And your goal, your job, is to direct them partway in telling them how they're doing, but also kind of give them advice on course corrections along the way, or perhaps a warning of like, hey, so you guys know that we're missing target by, you know, X percent and we're trending. Right.
Sales team needs to pick up the pace a little bit, you know.
So, I mean, it is definitely in my mind information technology, but there's an aspect of sales. There's a lot of data wrangling. It's such a funny role, but I've worn so many hats in my life, which I'm sure you have too.
Right.
I think it just comes with being Gen X, is like, you just kind of learn to roll with the punches over the years and you're like,
right. We're more adaptable than the people are now.
Yeah.
Than the generation is
following. A little malleable.
Right.
Ironically, before that, I had been laid off previously from my staff. And I was like, I don't want to go back into oil and gas because, unfortunately, the nature of the industry is it's cyclical and I'm getting older and I can't just keep being laid off spontaneously and looking for jobs. So I actually worked in the cigar industry. You probably didn't know this.
No.
I was a general manager for a tobacco chain of stores, franchise stores up in Alberta.
Right.
And I actually helped grow the franchise. This is a good thing on my resume, I suppose. From 7 stores to 20 stores.
Wow.
And so I got to sort of experience firsthand the challenges
deal.
of retail and training and taxes and inventory management, dealing with suppliers and dealing with manufacturers. So it was good to have on the resume, but unfortunately, tobacco is a tough gig in Canada.
Right, yeah, I imagine so. Even I didn't even know they had chains that big of tobacco cigar stores in Canada.
It's unusual. It's unusual because most of the population is located in Ontario and Quebec.
Right.
So, you know, that's where most of the people are, and that's where a lot of the tobacco stores are. And even there, I don't even know if there's anybody there that has more than two or three stores. But, I mean, it was, you know, I kind of got to use all my cigar industry stuff.
So is that chain of stores gone now? Did that end too?
No, they're still in business. Most of the locations are still running. They're just sort of running as independent entities now. Like they kind of, you know, they had to, yeah. Hmm. But interesting experience. Another one to add to the the toolkit of a resume, as it were.
Yeah, mine's like it's all over the place. I grew up working retail. I ran a Kmart store for a while.
I ran a store too, yep.
Yeah, until they started having all that trouble. So then I got out of that, and I had my own service rep business kind of thing. I was going to Home Depots and Builder Squares and Lowe's stores, designing and building displays. And then I got hired by one company to design and build displays all over the United States, Virgin Islands, did some in England.
Wow.
And then this import type thing I do now with China, it was my dad's business, and he got to the point where he didn't want to go to China anymore. So one day he took me to China with him, and we got done. He goes, "You did pretty good. How'd you like to come to work with me?" You know, in my early 30s, probably, you know, and I was like, sure, driving back and forth to China all the time. You know, I'm thinking Indiana Jones. I'm going to get a fedora and a leather jacket, you know, and run around all the time. So that's what I've been doing, but even that, I'm sort of a middleman. So, like, if there's something, like, if you wanted to make this cutter, I would find you a factory to make the cutters.
Right.
And then depending on how big you are, I can have the cutters, you know, put at the back of the factory. I can have them delivered to the port, or I can have them at your back door, wherever you need them in Canada type thing.
Right.
But even that business now with the internet has slowed way down.
Yeah.
They don't need somebody as much as they used to, you know, with all that kind of stuff. So luckily the boys picked me up upstairs 8 or 9 years ago. I've been tinkering around with them doing stuff, but now I'm doing social media, which, as we discussed, is a young man's game, apparently.
Yeah, it's very much young man's game.
Because, I mean, even though I'm turning numbers here like crazy and business it up and the views and the clicks and whatever that stuff is, everybody wants somebody right out of college.
Yeah.
They want some young intern, as your friend Coop says. It's an intern's job.
Yeah. That's true. It is kind of an intern. I mean, I get it in a way because obviously, you know, the quote unquote TikTok generation, you know, Gen Z, I think, is kind of viewed as the TikTok generation. So I think it's kind of viewed as like, well, you know, they grew up with it, so they just kind of know it better. And that might be true. I always get into these hilarious arguments. I'm like, you know, I use the quote, don't cite the deep magics to me because I was there when they were written. Like, listen, I've been around since the days where the internet was a Unix interface and you could really only get access via your university. So like I've been on the internet for,
so, yeah, you know, we've been on it since it started. I mean, I used to have a Texas Instrument computer we did dial up with.
Right.
You know, and going
to 300 baud modems. Yeah.
Yeah. They called them electronic bulletin boards back then, where you're logging in and you're, you know, it's basically the Reddick now or whatever it's called.
Oh.
It's that. Yeah. I miss those days.
I feel like it was a little more personal back then. Like, and I think just because the level of anonymity wasn't there. So like when you were smack talking someone on a local BBS, I mean, that person probably could have come over and punched you in the face.
Right, yeah. Otherwise, it worldwide. You could run into him at the grocery store.
That's right.
Hey, you're that guy who was talking shit about me. Nope, wasn't me. Nope, right. Wasn't me, no. You don't have a photo of me. How do you know it's me?
I mean, I didn't really go through my whole CV, but, I mean, the short thing of my CV is, like, I started in working in the restaurant industry because that was the only job I could really get as a young guy. Did that for a very long time. Got out of it, got into the IT/computer industry because my first computer was at the age of 7, which was extremely unusual for my generation,
right?
Your generation. but I took to it very naturally. And so I did that for a number of years, managed Staples as their computer. Can't even remember what the computer information manager for the department.
Right.
Did corporate sales for computer stuff. And then I kind of realized and then I went on to be a sales manager for a electronics store, and then kind of realized man, I hate retail. This is just not fun.
Right.
And then I worked in the telecom, and so I was working literally in a call center, kind of worked up the chain to business analyst, which is where I first got my taste for business analyst. And then got sucked from there into oil and gas because I kind of hit the ceiling, and they wouldn't kind of let me advance. And I'm like, right. Well, I can't just sit here and make the same money and not progress my career. I've had a few roles over the years, certainly a lot of hats.
You know what? Did you mention that you didn't go to college? Did we have that conversation?
We didn't. I mean, I technically did go to college.
I was there, but a couple of them asked me to leave.
I was there.
I guess they had great points.
I went to the lounges.
Yeah, I went to the bars and stuff. I can drink really well. So,
I don't know if you talk about this on your shows, but I think we've talked about this before. And if you don't want to talk about it, that's certainly okay. But
no.
You have ADHD, don't you?
It's not diagnosed, but yeah, I feel like I do. I'm sure my wife, who specializes in that in the scholastics industry, I'm sure she considers me to have ADHD for sure. Right. Yeah.
Well, I am diagnosed. I was actually diagnosed at a very young age. I am not medicated and not been medicated for a long time.
That's why
I just couldn't when I went into university, and I think the way it was projected to me, or the way it was sort of explained to me, is that, you know, it's this thing of this institution of learning. And I thought, well, that's fascinating. I mean, you know, it'd be nice to go into something and learn, because I enjoy learning. I enjoy knowledge.
Right.
And to me, it was just,
as I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, absorbing facts
I love learning new things.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, my friends always say John knows everything, and I don't, but I just pick up all this random knowledge because I'm bored or whatever.
You're like,
I thought university, right?
You're like the Canadian.
That would make sense.
I'm a
Canadian.
You're the Canadian BDP, apparently.
That's right. BDP.
You're right.
PCP.
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 I can't sit and watch just TV. I have to be doing something else at the same time.
Got to be playing on my phone.
Exactly. Right. Playing on my phone, playing with the dog, you know, annoying my wife who's trying to watch the show, something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just can't sit still.
Quoting the movie we're watching.
Right, yeah, or some weird fact about the movie or about the history that the movie's about.
Did you know this is where Aragorn breaks his toe?
Right, exactly.
I got to be careful with that stuff because I'm lucky to be married.
Spoiler alert.
But, I went for a year and a bit and realized this is just kind of a repeat of high school for me, that there's all these signs. In fact, it was worse because professors didn't care. They were there to teach a subject. They had no personal stake in my success or not.
Right.
They were getting paid regardless.
Right.
My parents certainly weren't helping me out. And I realized very quickly, this is not working. Other than really English, I took English Lit of all things, and I was killing in English Lit because I found it interesting. And so I did the work and did very well.
Right.
But every other course I was taking, just complete tank, because I didn't get it. I wasn't interested. I wasn't doing any of the work
Like math. I hate math. Can't do anything with numbers.
Mm.
I can add things in my head and do that kind of stuff. But sine and cosine and what is X equal? I'm like, I don't need this.
So, you know, what's funny about that is I'm kind of the same way, except that when it comes to money math is no problem.
Money math isn't a problem.
And I think because it's real and tangible.
Right.
And data math was the same thing, because it was an observable, measurable, real, tangible thing to me. I could look at data. I mean, I felt like Neo at times, where I'm like, that data's wrong.
Right.
And they're like, how do you know? I'm like, it's wrong. I can just see that your data's wrong.
Right. Now, hold on. Let me dodge the bullets. Okay, now we're good. All right, so now that we've told our life stories, let's get into some of these questions here, see what we can find to talk about.
Sure.
All right. What are some of the biggest challenges middle-aged individuals face when trying to transition to a new career? Well, first, before you answer that, what are you trying to get into now? You're just trying to find something from your portfolio of skills, or are you trying to get into something altogether different?
I definitely want to get into something that is business analyst related. I mean, if I could wave a magic wand,
right,
I would work for a cigar company, right? Because and this is probably going to come off amazingly arrogant, but I feel like I could walk into a role at a large tobacco company and just start doing it, because it's like, look, I've got a decade of sales experience. I've got a decade of management experience. I've got a decade of business analytics. I've got 2.5 decades of IT. I've got more than a decade and a half now of a hardcore cigar experience.
Right.
What is it? I'm sure that there's many things in your company that I don't know, but I feel confident that I can pick them up very quickly.
Right. And exactly. Just give me a little time.
Proficient in the role.
You know, just immerse me in it, and then I'll just absorb it and pick it up as I go along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so are there Canadian tobacco companies? I mean,
yes, but this is rude of me. I don't think that the tobacco industry is kind of based out of the US.
Right.
And that's where the opportunities are.
That's why I was asking.
Yeah.
So you don't have any children, right? It's just you and your wife. Do you have children?
No children.
I didn't think you had children. Like, I know you, but I don't really know you.
Yeah.
Does she want to move to America?
I don't think she'd be. So we've had this conversation because I've, you know, recently said to her, look, if an opportunity came available, almost certainly it means I would have to relocate. And really, realistically, it's either going to be, it would have to be Florida or Texas. So it's really kind of the only two places.
Right.
And almost certainly it's Florida, because most tobacco companies are based out of, down in South Florida.
Right.
So, you know, I think I'm at an age where, and not to sound like a pessimist, but it's like dreams like that aren't realistic. So I say, yes, I would love to do something like that.
Right.
But there's no point in even having that conversation, because the likelihood that a company is going to sponsor me as a Canadian to get the, I forget the name of it, but the particular type of visa you need to be a foreign national working in the United States and then get your citizenship.
That. Right.
They have to take that on. So the company would have to be big enough to be able to do that. And I would have to have enough of a relationship and qualification for them to want to do that. So is it possible? Sure. Is it realistic? I don't think so.
Right.
My wife, because she's a wonderful woman, has said, look, if an opportunity came available, I'd be willing to relocate, because she's a court reporter. And so she could technically work.
Right.
She would actually have an easier time of working in the States than I would.
Right.
Because her certification is completely transferable down to the States.
Ah.
But is that likely to happen? Probably not. So I'm kind of pursuing things that are available here, which is a lot of business analytical roles in whatever industry that really is hiring. I mean, I don't think I'm particularly agnostic, because you've got to put food on the table and I got to work.
How long can you be in America without a job type thing? Would it be a tourist visa, or, I mean, you're not coming down as a student, so
I don't know how any
of that works.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to preface by saying, I don't know the actuals. I believe my understanding is you can be in the States and or Canada, because we have a fairly loosey goosey relationship.
Right.
For 6 months on a, what's called a tourist, you know, an automatic tourist visa. I think the challenge becomes, and I didn't think about this before I came out for the cigar trade show, the PCA trade show in April.
Right.
If you're unemployed, the border services tend to raise an eyebrow at that, because I think part of them, they look at you and go, what's the likelihood this person doesn't come back? What if they try to illegally, you know?
Yeah,
like,
just stay.
And I'm not kidding. Like, yeah.
Right.
What happens if this person just tries to stay in the United States illegally and get employment and yada, yada. And I didn't think about that until I got to the border, and for the first time ever, because they always ask, they always say, like, what do you do for work? And I thought, oh shoot, I'm actually unemployed right now. And I thought, oh my God, am I going to get denied at the border here?
Well, can't you just lie?
You don't want to lie to border services, because if you lie to border services and they catch you lying, you're going to be in for a world of hurts.
Well,
they have all those records, Mike. They have all of your information.
Instantaneous.
They're asking questions you already know the answer to.
Oh, you couldn't say like I'm in the communications industry, and because I run a couple of podcasts and I'm part of the Coop 17 whatever amendment guys. I don't know whatever he's calling his group at the moment.
Oh, so you're a Canadian, Mike, and you work for an American company?
Yes. They pay me.
How does that work?
They pay me in Canadian dollars.
Trust me, they would. As a frequent traveler through the border, the truth will almost never get you into trouble. It is when you start obfuscating things, especially with border services, you can find yourself in a world of discomfort very, very quickly. So I just explained to him, look, in fact, he didn't even care. I said, look, I'm unemployed. And he said, whatever. He's like, what were you doing before you got laid off? And I said, oh, I was in business analytics. And I don't know why they asked that question. I know there's a reason for it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't, they don't ask us. I mean,
that's interesting.
What's the purpose of your trip? Business or pleasure? And you go business. And sometimes they'll say what kind, but they never go prove it.
Hmm. Well, for us, they'll say, where are you going? How long are you going to be there? Do you have anything to declare? So are you, tobacco, alcohol, et cetera.
You have to declare when you leave?
They generally ask you.
So are you talking to
anything.
Our people or your people? This has become like a border crossing show now.
So it's kind of interesting. So all of the border crossings here are what's called a dual national border crossing. So there's technically sovereign U.S. soil inside international airports in Canada.
Right.
So if you go to the Calgary International Airport, there is a sovereign U.S. soil. Those are all Americans, American Border Services. And so you actually are stepping into sovereign U.S. soil, and then they begin to ask you questions to essentially whether you're going to be permitted to come into the United States or not.
I've crossed into Canada before, but in a car, never had this kind of trouble.
I mean, you'll get asked about fruit and meat and that sort of thing, I think, typically when you come from the States.
I was a teenager. We were driving into Windsor from Detroit so we could go to strip clubs and drink
classic
beer. Right.
They should have asked you about firearms and probably alcohol, I would think.
Not back then, they don't. I get the farm question when I would go to China. Have you? It's on the thing. Have you been to any farms in China? Because you don't want anything on your feet.
Yeah,
no soil or animal dung on your shoes.
Oil.
All right. Let's
go. No,
go ahead.
Anyways, yeah.
No, go ahead.
This has been Border Services Talk.
Right. The biggest challenges middle-aged individuals face in trying to transition to a new career. I think it's our age. I think the age is the biggest problem.
Mm.
One, I mean, if
yeah, there's a,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
If they're hiring somebody, I think they want more of a longevity, which, they might get that out of us, but they're not going to get 40 years out of us.
Right.
Like you would hiring somebody out of college.
Is that even realistic these days, though?
I don't think it is anymore.
I don't think so.
Maybe now I just still have that mindset of back when I was, younger looking for a job and you hope to find a career somewhere. Looking back, I kind of wish I hadn't gone to work for my dad because I'd probably be better off right now. I mean, it's been a great 30 years that I've been doing it, and I've traveled all over Asia and all that kind of stuff, and I know tons of shit about China and everything, but I mean, now the business is slow, I always knew this industry I was in would die eventually. The internet was going to kill it. Something was going to kill it. But I don't know if I would have made the same leap. I mean, it's been a lot of freedom for the last 30 years,
It's one of those classic conundrums of it's easy to look back with the knowledge you have now and say I would have made better decisions, but of course you're making the best decision you can at the time with the information that's available to you at the time with the pressures you're facing at the time. So.
Yeah. All right, so what do you think the biggest problem is?
No, I would agree. I think, and I don't know why that is. I think it's one of those biases of hiring where they have this standard that doesn't necessarily make sense. I think for me, a lot of it is they say, well, is this guy going to stick around, probably coming from oil and gas? Is he just going to jump ship when he finds something different or better or whatever?
Right.
And it's hard. I mean, you can't really get that across in a resume. They say, look, I really, really, really just need to be in an industry that's stable because I'm already laid off and I'm approaching 50. I cannot be laid off in my mid-50s because I can't imagine how much more difficult this is going to be to try and get a job
Right.
When they might be looking at my resume and going, well, this guy's going to want to retire in 10 years. And it's like, if only that were true, if only I could retire for 65, sure.
Yeah.
But at this point, you know, I just need a paycheck, man.
Right.
I just need to work.
I'm going
to
work up till the morning before my funeral. I've got plans.
Right. Right.
Palmer didn't show up today. He must have finally died because that's the only reason he wouldn't be here. All right. How does the job market perception of older workers impact their ability to find new career opportunities?
Well, I can tell you that the last time I was looking for work, it didn't seem that difficult.
Right.
So I don't know if that was because I lucked out or there was a particular time frame that I happened to be looking where that was easier than now. But this is the first time in, I don't know, 35 years, 34
right.
years,
right.
that I would say I'm generally flummoxed about not having opportunities. And there's jobs where I look, in fact, quick anecdote. So there's a job that I applied for months ago, and I only applied for it because I was just getting so frustrated at the lack of responses that I said, well, I'm just going to apply for this job because I know that I'm 150% qualified for this role.
Right.
So at the very least, I should get a call and go through an interview process. And there was nothing, no interview, no callback. I got a canned email response 2 months after I applied, 2 months saying, we've gone through the process, blah, blah, blah. You've not been selected for an interview.
Right.
And I thought, first of all, 2 months, that's an insane amount of time to go through a hiring process.
Right.
And second of all, how is it that I didn't get a call? Because, and maybe, you know, I guess they could have said, well, you were too qualified for the role. It's like, look, man, I just need to work.
Right. Yeah. I'll just work. You know, I understand it's not what I was making before, but something's better than nothing.
Something's better than nothing. The bank is, like I said, the bank's very insistent. So I think what it is, what I've come to terms with over the last few weeks, and I don't know if you've heard of this before. Have you heard of what ATS is, the application tracking system, applicant tracking system?
No.
So I didn't know about this, and I'm a little embarrassed because I'm a tech guy, and this is the first time I've ever heard about this. So if the company is large enough, a lot of companies use this essentially auto screening software.
Right.
So you send in a resume and or a cover letter, and this software automatically screens you out.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so essentially what I've been reading over the last few weeks is that you essentially have to custom design your resume per job application based on the verbiage and description of that job. And your resume has to match that job with the keywords within a certain percentage of criteria, but not too high, because then it gets screened out as they'll say, well, it's just copying the job application,
right?
The job opportunity. So you need to have within, you know, call it 77 to 89% matching the thing. And I thought that's one of my personal hells. I can't imagine. I've been doing it, but like, I can't tell you as someone with ADHD, having to custom design my resume per job application.
So did you say you were doing it?
I started doing it because.
Wow. I couldn't imagine doing that.
I mean, it's been 6 months. I've only heard back from one of the jobs I applied for, and it was an automatic no. And so now I'm essentially custom writing a resume based on the job description per job. And like I said, it's my own personal hell. Like, nice. This is just, as someone with ADHD, I don't know how people who are neurotypicals do it.
Right.
But as someone who's neurodivergent, it makes me want to never work again. Honestly,
yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that. I mean, yeah. I had one resume and I was getting nothing. So then I, you know, beefed it right. up a little bit, or ran it through an AI thing. And that's the one I'm using now, but I couldn't imagine changing it for every single one.
And look, I rewrote my resume probably every 3 weeks because I just was so confused as to why I wasn't getting any responses. And I'm like, and so, you know, I rewrote and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote. And then it was only a few weeks ago that I read this thing of like, are you using the job scan ATS? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? And they broke it all down. And I'm like, is this really the reason that I've been getting screened out for the last 6 months?
Wow.
Because I started applying essentially the week of, I got laid off on a Monday.
Right.
And I think I had my first job applications by that Wednesday. So.
Yeah. I started looking last November. I haven't even had an interview.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get an email back or something, it's like you said, you know, we've gone another way, or thank you for replying. We've decided you don't meet our requirements or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking 2 to 5 a day, easy. You know, 4 days a week, maybe. Because, you know, if I'm sitting there watching TV, I'm looking on LinkedIn, I'll go, you match, your skills match for these 17 jobs. I go, okay.
Right.
Well, I don't want to move to California. So, oh, there's 3. Oh, resume.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, because I specifically, I think 2 rewrites ago, I specifically went through and I thought, am I actually getting screened out because they have detected my age and they're just like, we don't want someone your age.
Right.
So I kind of removed anything that could technically identify what my age was.
Oh, that's a good idea.
In terms of, right. Because I took out graduating class for when I attended university, when I graduated high school, I removed all of my job experience except for the last few roles, changed some of the verbiage around, and that didn't seem to make a difference.
Yeah, see, they used to say, because, you know, like I've been doing the same thing here for 25 years or whatever it is, that shows, you know, shows that you're not going anywhere, that you're
that's longevity. That's my thought. You're loyal. Know?
Right.
Stable.
So, but I mean, if they look at the dates, they go, wait, how's this guy been doing this for 30 years? If we think he's 30, he's got to be in his 50s.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a bad idea. In my first one, you know, people were putting photos on him, and I thought, oh, well, crap, I need to take that photo off, because that's a dead giveaway that I'm an older guy.
It's weird because some places say attach a photo, and then you'll read the next site, and they're like, oh, don't put a photo on there.
Right.
Like, okay, well, I don't know who to trust anymore, because
it's all
conflicting advice.
Right, conflicting advice.
Put your skills on there as a subset. Don't put your skills on there as a subset. It comes off as bragging.
Right, exactly.
Okay, bro. I just want to work, man. I just want to work. Please just hire me.
Right. All right, how important is networking in finding a new career later in life, and what are some ways to effectively network in middle age?
Well, if only my parents had taught me when I was younger, hey, by the way, the single most important skill you can have is networking, because you will be able to get a job that you are unqualified for based entirely on your networking ability and the network you've built up. And I didn't know this was a thing until I got into, my late 30s, early 40s. I had no network.
Right.
And I mean, I would say the last, it might be actually, now that I think about it, it might be the last 3 or 4 roles were kind of really based on having a network.
Because
I'm trying to think, it certainly seems to. Unfortunately, my network is in a different industry now, and I don't have a network sort of outside of that industry. And
have you thought about trying to use that to find something in the cigar business? I mean, you've got to know a shit ton of people.
So for the cigar industry, I do know a shit ton of people. And so I have not yet started to sort of reach out to my cigar industry people.
Right.
I think because part of me says I'm uncomfortable being a transactional friend where I say, I gotcha. Hey man, right.
I need to cash in on some of this friendship we have.
Right.
Yeah.
It feels uncomfortable to me, but I think we're rapidly reaching a point where I need to like send out an email to, you know, the 10, 12 people that I know in large companies and say, hey, look, this is my situation. I don't know if there's an opportunity. I don't know, whatever. But if there is, please keep me in mind, because I'm confident I could start tomorrow and start making a difference in your company.
Right.
Whatever the role is, I just need to work. And I'm getting, you know, it's getting a little scary now.
Right.
6 months is a long time.
That is a long time.
So to get to answer your question, I have considered that. I have not yet done that. I think I may end up having to do that within the next 60 to 90 days because,
Right. Yeah. And in my industry with China, the network are the customers and they've already moved on somewhere else. So, you know, it's not like I can call them up and go, hey, how would you like to hire me? You know, now that you're in Mexico.
So the network's just closed off for you.
Right. Yeah. But you're right in the cigar thing. I mean, think how many reps and salesmen just jump from company to company.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, that being said, I don't know that I want to be. I don't know that I want to be or have it in me to be a
sales
hit the bricks rep, right?
Yeah,
driving around.
I tried that. It is a lot harder than it sounds. Let me tell you, I did it.
I've done that kind of sales.
Yeah, I did it for like 6 months, 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah, everybody's your friend until you want them to buy a cigar.
Right.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to get pretty. And again, I've done that kind of sale. You have to get pretty used to rejection in some cases, pretty aggressive personal rejection.
Right.
You just kind of have to be able to shake that off. I've certainly done that kind of sales before. I can do that kind of sales. I don't enjoy it. And I don't know that at my current age, that's something I want to do again, because again, I need to think about not just the next couple of years, but the next 10 years.
Right. All right. What are the emotional and psychological factors that come into play when changing careers in middle age?
Well, I would consider myself a pretty together dude in terms of my emotional self, whatever, and my mental fortitude. And this is not my first rodeo being laid off,
right.
But boy, gosh almighty, it's certainly the first few months is no big deal. When you start to get into, month four and month five, I think the self-doubt really starts to creep in, at least for me.
Right.
Where I go, like, am I just bad at my job? And then right. I kind of catch myself. I'm like, no,
anybody
dude,
like
you were
me.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm like, was I just deluding myself? And then I have to sort of self-check and go, dude, like, you were literally in the top 1% of performers in your last four or five roles. Knock that shit off. But it's hard, again, it's hard to sort of take the realistic, where you are and where you're not getting responses with what is it that I'm doing wrong and how do I fix that? And those two things seem to be in conflict. So, I mean, the worst thing is if you go to like those Reddit sites where they have job help in terms of how to design your resume and
right.
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's guys in there who are like, I've been looking for work for 12 months and I think I might, jump off a bridge. And I'm like, okay, that's enough Reddit for today. Because
right, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
This is not working.
Yeah.
Is there a more positive website I can go to?
Right. I feel for those guys. I suppose at some point you just kind of go, well, look, if I need to go work as a cook, I guess that's what I have to do to make ends meet. But you really have to have a really strong emotional core. You have to have a pretty good support system in place, I think, for your mental health. Because, like I said, I consider myself to be pretty, pretty together. And at the 6 month mark, there's definitely been some times where I'm like, I'm turning the computer off. I'm going to have a cigar because I need it for my mental health because I just, I can't do this anymore today.
Right.
What about you?
Yeah. I agree with everything you said. And even if you do have to, can't think of the right word, but if you have to take a job that's not what you want, but you just need the money to come in, that becomes
better than nothing.
Yeah. It's better than nothing. But then that becomes a hard psychological thing you got to deal with too.
Yes.
I was an executive at a, big company 6 months ago.
Right.
Now I'm flipping burgers or, whatever you have to do. But like I said, you do what you do. I mean, whatever you have to do. I'm not above, riding on the back of a garbage truck if I had to.
Yeah.
Physically I couldn't do it, but,
Yeah, physically. And I think that's, so here in Calgary, I keep seeing these things where people keep saying, try out trades. I'm like, listen, I'm not a trades guy.
Right.
But again, I'm capable of learning. And then you start to dig into it and you're like, well, okay, but you're only going to make $18 to $20 an hour for your first 5 years. And then you have to get your tip. I'm like, okay, well, what I'm reading between the lines here is it's going to take you 10 years into the trades to start making any decent money. And I can't be in my 60s still working my way into trades to make decent right. money. Like the timeline of that's just not going to work.
Picking up bags of concrete or something. You can't be doing that at our age, right? If I pick up an I work every Friday upstairs, and it's an 8-hour shift, whatever it is. If I pick up an extra shift during the week because somebody's called in sick or something shorthanded or something, my feet hurt for 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're not young men anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little hardened to that because I spent so many years in service that I kind of can go to that mental place where I just kind of block the pain out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I can get through the shift, but it's when you're at home or for the next or for the next 2 days, you know, when
your back's sore,
you're soaking your feet.
Your knees are aching.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Everybody said, what's wrong with you? I had to work 2 shifts this week.
You know, the funny thing is, if I was in the States, I probably would have picked up some shifts at a local cigar shop because I feel like, to me, that's not even work. Like, I could go in and I could probably do that half asleep in the sense of I've done so many years of retail and I know how to just have a conversation with somebody and say, like, hey, man, you know.
Oh, I enjoy the hell out of it. I love doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're ringing people up, you're talking about cigars, you even do a couple of online orders. I mean, it's fun, but still, because I'm not the guy who's just going to, sit at the bar and wait on the guy to come in and go, hey, you need any help over there? Good. Okay, fine. Let me know when you're done.
Yeah, that seems pretty boring to take a 8 or 8.5 hour shift sitting in a cash register point of sale system and not engaging customers, not going around the lounge.
Right.
I mean, that's not how I'm built, but I realize that's not everybody.
Yeah, emptying ashtrays, picking up trash. Oh, nobody's done the floors this week, so I'll do the floors,
Got to keep moving.
All right, what are some common misconceptions about changing careers in middle age, and how can they be addressed?
Well, so to your point at the top was, I think there's a ton of preconceptions about, at least for me, this guy's going to retire in X amount of years, or this guy's going to be difficult to manage. Listen, I've had managers who were close to half my age, and I really don't care. I don't have pride from the perspective of I don't have the internalized arrogance that I think I know better than everybody else, or that somebody half my age might not know something better than I do, or might not be a better manager than I am. I am fully ready and willing and able to, as you say, if it means being in the back of a garbage truck, let's do it. Let's go. I'll give 110%. Like, I'll be your most productive employee from day one.
Right.
I'm not going to be slacking on the job. And I don't know where that comes from. If it's kind of bleed over from the sort of boomer generation where they think, Gen X's are going to be cut. It's like, listen, man, we've been independent since we were 6 or 7 years old.
Exactly right.
You give us a task, we're gonna accomplish it, and then we're gonna find other things to do along the way that you didn't even know needed to be done. So, it is not my goal to create difficulty for you. It's my goal to be a good employee and make things better. So again, I don't know where that comes from, but it certainly seems like that's the case. Is like whether it's this guy's going to leave for a better job, or this guy wants to retire in X amount of years, or this guy's just going to be difficult to manage. I don't know. It's so bizarre to me because it can't be further from the truth.
No, not with people in our generation. Just not. Let me read the question one more time.
Yeah.
Well, you pretty much hit it there. I mean, that pretty much covered it. Because then the next one goes in something I was going to bring up on this one. But the next question, what role does lifelong learning and skill development play in successful transitioning to a new career later in life? Because the biggest thing now is everybody wants you to have a degree.
Yeah.
I think we, the two of us, we have more life knowledge than any kid coming out of school.
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, you sound you're a lot like me. I can pick up just about anything. You know, give me enough time. Yeah. I don't have to. Go ahead.
Which isn't to discount a degree. I mean, I certainly wish I had a bachelor's in management or a bachelor. I mean, I really wish I had stuck it out and taken some sort of computer course so that at least right. I had a bachelor's in computer sciences or whatever.
Something.
But the equivalent experience now, where you would start with that degree and where I am, you can't, that's just not something you could teach in school anymore because
right.
it's practical experience. And although I wish I had the degree, how do you download 20 years or 25 years of practical experience to a new graduate?
Do you think you'd be in any different place or situation if you had had that degree?
Oh, no question. No question. There's no doubt in my mind that I would have had other opportunities open up. In fact, I think in my last role, I was even told point blank that your salary range was going to be capped based on your formal education. So the lack of degree, and that didn't used to be the case with that company because they were a private company. But when they went public, the roles and rules around that changed, and it makes sense because you know now that you're publicly facing, you have to face some of that scrutiny.
Right.
But I can't change that now, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
That window is long past.
Now, right.
Yeah. I'm not going to take on $85,000 worth of student debt or whatever it might cost to,
education is not free in Canada. I'm not being sarcastic. I just don't know. It's not like healthcare paid for.
The education system prior to graduating high school is covered by the government. Obviously, we have private schools just like you do in the States.
Right.
But universities are, I mean, I don't think they're as expensive as the U.S. In fact, I suspect they're probably a good 30% less expensive equivalent dollar value. But that's still expensive. I think if I were to do the math, it's got to be, just off the cuff, it's got to be $85,000 plus to get any sort of degree, probably more than that. Maybe it's $110,000. And I can't fathom in my brain taking on that sort of debt for a piece of paper just to get a role that I'm already kind of qualified for, realistically.
Yeah, exactly. Just not, yeah, at this point.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. Yeah, I was always going to get a degree in marketing was the plan, but I mean, I was like you. Either it wasn't fast enough or there was something that they wanted me to do. I'm like, that just seems stupid. I'm not doing that.
And I mean, I don't know how you grew up. The other aspect to me was, my parents certainly did provide funding for school, but I was always kind of poor. And so like I kind of had to work because if I wanted to be able to afford a car and have an apartment, that money had to come from somewhere. And the only place that was going to come from was work. And I certainly didn't have it in me to sort of, I know a lot of people did, they worked and they put themselves through school. And I mean, kudos to those people.
Yeah. I don't know how they did that either. That's it's a whole different type of person.
They're built differently than I am. That's very impressive. Anytime I hear a story of someone who tells me that, I'm like, I wish I was you, but there's no way I could accomplish that.
My wife's gotten two more degrees since we've been married for 12 years that she had to get to progress into her, into her career.
So, wow.
I mean, it's just crazy. And she's up doing school. She's online doing school. And it's like, I need to write a paper. Can you help me? I go, I didn't go to school, right? And she goes, yeah, I know, but you're good at this. I go, sure, not a problem. I'll write this paper.
Yeah.
Right.
That's impressive.
Do an interview one time of somebody that went to something or something. I don't know. And I just wrote it. I'm like, okay, tell me what kind of, give me the questions and then I'll be the person and we'll just write this up.
Yeah. I mean, look, so kind of back to the question of degrees and stuff. And again, this might come across really arrogant and it's not meant to, but I have run across people in many different facets of roles. And I thought, I have some experience in what you're doing.
Right.
You are doing that as a career. And I'm not sure you're qualified to be doing that. And I've had that happen on multiple occasions where I'm like, how did you get hired into that role? Because it doesn't seem like you have the skills required, and they have a degree, and that's fine.
Right.
But I'm like, every other way in which that role is qualified, it doesn't seem like you're qualified, and you've been working in that role for a couple of years. So I can't really align the two things of like, you're obviously doing the role and you're being paid to do the role and you seem to be gainfully employed. But when I look at what you're doing and the way you're doing it, it doesn't seem like you're qualified.
Right.
And I've had that happen multiple times. So that always kind of blows my mind when I run into someone and the level of competency, I suppose, is where I'm going. The level of competency that I expect them to have is not remotely the level of competency that they have. And I go, well, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. Two of my boys have college degrees. One of them was political science. He got a degree, and the other one was health occupation. The political science one's a firefighter, and the health occupation is in sales. So, I mean, because he decided he didn't, well, I don't know what you can do with political science unless you're going to be a politician, which he was definitely.
You can be a politician, yeah.
Right. But the one with health occupation, he had a couple of jobs in that industry. He was like, I don't like it. This is messy. I don't want to do this. So now he's selling some type of software to bars or something. I don't know exactly.
You know, I think that's the other aspect, Mike, is that if I would have been able to look forward 10 years from where I was and say, hey, look, it would really be helpful if you had a degree in computer sciences because 10 right. years from now or 15 years from now, you could be doing this role. And so that would motivate you. But when you're 20 years old or 19 years old and you're like, hey, why don't you plan out the rest of your life with this $120,000 or $200,000 worth of debt? I just don't know if that's a realistic expectation. As you just demonstrated, they got degrees and then they decided to go in completely different fields right, where the degrees aren't applicable.
Right.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense. And like this podcasting that we both do.
Right.
I mean, Mikey came to me 6 years ago and goes, you know what? We should do a podcast. I go, okay, so now I've got a $20,000 studio with equipment and everything in it that I know how to run. But
right.
I couldn't have gone to college. I'd still be scratching my head going, I got to plug what, where? Can I just do it? Let me do it. Because like the way I have this rigged up in here where the soundboard goes into the cameras and the camera goes into the iPad, you know, and then there's a splitter over here, which probably shouldn't be there. I'm not sure exactly where it goes, but it's hooked up. You know, I always tell them, don't unhook anything because I don't know if I can do this again.
Right. So we were kind of talking in the green room before we started.
Right.
And somewhere along the lines, I realized, look, John, you've got, I don't know, 15,000, 20,000 hours worth of audio engineering, audio technical experience, video engineering, video editing, audio engineering experience, and broadcast experience. And that just sort of happened because you were bored and decided to obsessively become a podcaster
right.
12 years ago.
Right.
And it just kind of happened.
Right.
But I don't really consider it when I think about it, I'm like, that's kind of a wide skill set you should probably be putting in a resume. But it's then the other part of me is like, it's just something I do for fun.
It's not really marketable. Who's going to pay you to do a podcast unless you're doing your own, you know?
Maybe I should see if Joe Rogan is willing to hire me on as a production.
See, that's the problem. With Joe Rogan's assistant, we probably walk into that room and go, I don't know what the fuck these buttons do.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Personal cigar valet.
Right. Yeah. My system's held together with electrical tape and duct tape. I mean, I don't even know what this button does over here, Joe. How do you hit record?
If it's dumb and it works, it's not dumb.
Let me sit there next to you and just have a microphone. I'm good at that part.
Yeah.
That part I can do with no problem at all. If I could walk around with a microphone strapped in front of me, I'd talk to everybody I'd run into.
Right.
All right. Final question. Then we'll let you get out of here. All back right. to your great white Canadian North. What advice would you give to someone in middle age looking to embark on a new career path? Don't do it. Don't do it. Stay where you're at if possible.
Yeah. So first of all, and I've always known this to be true. Never, ever, ever leave a role without another role solidified.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
because. And I've always known that to be true. And I think I've. I don't think I've ever rage quit anything. It's always been you are laid off, which is unexpected.
Right.
I would say no matter how upset you are in a role or how dissatisfied you feel, being unemployed for an extended period of time is going to be much more painful for you than whatever you're going through. And if you can kind of just keep your head down and tough it out, you'll be in a, and I think there's an aspect of, this is going to probably sound a little sexist, but I'm going to go with it anyways.
Sure. Go ahead.
You know how, as a married guy, I can go out and meet women, no problem. Like, right. I could get hit on no problem these days.
Right.
If I take my wedding ring off, no one is going to give me a second glance.
Yeah,
and the reason I use that as an example, right, because when you're employed, you are somehow more desirable as an employee because right. you already have gainful employment. When you are unemployed, you are now less desirable as an employer.
There's something wrong with him.
There's something wrong with him. Otherwise, yeah. why isn't he working?
Right. Same idea when you're single. Why doesn't he have a woman?
Right.
Why, what's wrong with him, Lee? You know?
What's wrong with him? Why doesn't he have a... how can he be in his late 40s and not have a partner? Why is he broken?
Right. Why is he broken?
Right?
We're all broken.
Why is he broken?
We're all broken.
We're all broken.
Just love.
So, yeah, I would say number one rule, definitely never, ever, ever leave a role without having something else lined up. And I mean, like, rock solid lined up with an offer letter signed, et cetera, et cetera. And then number two, as I've painfully learned, as much as I hate the schmoozing whatever events and all that stuff,
right,
you have to do it. You have to do it because otherwise you wake up one day and you have no network and you go, you know, I don't know anyone at this company. And the other employee, the person who's applying knows three people at that company.
Right.
Well, I hate to tell you, but that guy's going to get the role and you're not. Because there's three other people that can put a good word in.
Hey, does anybody know John? Have you met John? No, we don't. We don't. Nobody. Nobody knows John.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. But we know Phil. Phil's a great guy. We know that guy. We know the
Phil's a great guy.
Phil's a great guy.
Wears weird masks all the time, but he's a good guy.
He wears weird masks. Maybe one day I'll tell you about the mask. All right, John, appreciate you being on, buddy.
Hey, great talking to you, and I appreciate being on. It's nice for a change to talk about other things other than cigar stuff, which I feel isn't like it? We spend most of our days
yes.
talking about.
Yes, exactly. Right.
No.
All right, bud, I'm going to let you go. Thanks, John.
Take care, brother.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye.
All right, thanks to this week's Plus One, John McTavish, for sharing his insights and making our conversation so engaging. Tune in next week for another thought-provoking episode in the Palmer Show Plus One podcast. Until then, stay curious and keep the conversations going. Bye. The Palmer Show Plus One podcast, its owners and sponsors, take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the talk show host or their guest. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the belief of Mike and Mike Productions or the podcast provider, and opinions between talk show hosts may differ. It is not our intention to libel, incite, or hurt anyone's feelings. We invite you to write the show's host, Mike Palmer, with any feedback or suggestions that you have for their shows. These broadcasts are presented and made public as entertainment in the hopes that they will be entertaining to the audience.